her from being nervous. Julie, alcoholic. Hey, everyone. Larry, thanks so much for asking me. This seemed like so much a better idea that, like, 4 months ago than it was tonight. Oh, my gosh. Wow. It was, like, a little overwhelming, but am I saying the right distance? Okay. Anyways, so I guess I'm going to share with you a little bit about what brought me to these rooms. You know, I grew up in a very, well, I guess first I want to start off by saying that, you know, all the things that I'm going to tell you about that brought me to these rooms, you know, they had nothing to do with why I drank. And the events that happened to me had nothing to do with why I drank. You know, I have an allergy of the body, an obsession of the mind, and I have a huge spiritual malady that I am currently working on. I grew up in a very loving family up in Los Angeles. Mom, dad, an older sister, and a younger brother. You know, they were very loving, very supportive. But my mom and my dad had a very tumultuous relationship. There was a lot of fighting, a lot of yelling. No physical abuse, but definitely some emotional abuse going on. And unfortunately, you know, my sister and my brother kind of took the role of just, you know, exiting themselves, so I kind of fell back to me to kind of be the peacemaker. So that's kind of the role that I grew up with in my family. And, you know, I guess my mom always used to say that I was like a pretty sensitive, just really sweet child, but really, really too overly sensitive. And I do remember kind of feeling like that. I also felt like there was kind of this sense of impending doom always. And I don't really know where that came from. Maybe I was already kind of sensing the fact that there was something missing, which later I found out to be alcoholism. So I had my first drink when I was about 12 or 13. My friend and I got into her parents' liquor cabinet and drank and, you know, filled it up with water and did that whole bit. And what I got was I got that ease and comfort. You know, for the first time, I didn't have that feeling of impending doom. I don't know, I felt relaxed. I felt that warm sensation and feeling of comfort you get from drinking. And, you know, I didn't drink a lot at a younger age. When I did get to high school, I drank quite a bit on the weekends. And it started to kind of crawl into the week time as well. And when I drank in high school, I definitely was a blackout drinker, or vomiting, or, you know, accidentally running into the sliding glass window like I was one of those girls. Also, too, you know, hitting a few parked cars and driving away and all that good stuff. But anyways, yeah, so from the moment that I really, really started drinking, I absolutely was blacking out. I was absolutely an alcoholic and drinking alcoholically. You know, but for whatever reason, I was really highly functional. You know, and I did well, really well in high school. I was really popular in high school. I ended up going to college. I graduated from UCLA with a bachelor's degree in psychology. Sorry, I'm nervous. Anyways, I graduated with a degree in psychology from UCLA, and I got in. I decided not to really pursue that. I really wanted to make a lot of money because I thought that was going to make me happy. So I went into business, and I worked in the medical education industry for about 13 years. And I had a very successful career, you know, and that was really unfortunate for me because all this drinking and, you know, drugs are a part of my story. Obviously, I'm not going to expound upon them here because really they were just a means to keep me up so I wasn't passing out or throwing up. I didn't like downer drugs. I only liked stuff that kept me awake all night. But I was really successful. You know, I was really well-liked. I was really successful. I was doing the deal, and I started making a shitload of money. And so nobody really took it very seriously that I had a problem. I partied. I worked really hard, and I partied really hard. And, you know, so I always kind of equated to, you know, that feeling like you're drowning, but nobody knows you're in the water type thing. That's kind of how I felt, and it was really frightening for me in the end when things really started to unravel. Nobody really knew what was going on with me. On the topic of love and marriage, I was married twice. The first time I married my dad, basically. He's a raging alcoholic, very nice man, and been in the program for 6 years now, and he's actually the person who brought me into the program. But he, raging alcoholic, didn't work for about 6 years of the 8 years of our relationship, and, you know, just not emotionally there for me, much like my father was with my mom. So I was replaying that out in my own life. Second husband, because I divorced the first one even after he got into recovery because he was the problem, not me. So the second husband, total teetotaler, could not be more opposite than the first. And I thought that was going to fix me. I really thought that I'd stop drinking. We'd have a baby, live happily ever after, picket fence, the whole deal. And, you know, obviously that wasn't going to stop my drinking either. And in the process, you know, I steamrolled over him. And I ruined like a huge part of his life. And I broke his heart, which was absolutely awful. So that was like love and marriage for me, other than the series of boyfriends and the overlapping of boyfriends and the cheating and the lying and all that good stuff. One other thing that was kind of going on that was kind of important during my disease that I want to touch on before I talk about my recovery is that when I was in my early 30s, my brother was diagnosed with colon cancer. And that was very devastating for my family. He was only 27 years old, and it had gone undiagnosed for a year. So for the next 4 years after he was diagnosed, we watched my brother die for 4 years. Started out in his colon, moved all over his body, numerous surgeries, radiation, chemotherapy. The one thing that I can say about that was really impactful for me was just the grief that I saw my parents go through and the fact that I had absolutely no coping skills whatsoever to deal with that. All I had was alcohol. There were so many times when I could have been there for my family and I could have been there for my brother, and I wasn't because I wanted to go out and drink because I couldn't handle what was going on. So enough about that, because I think I have under 5 minutes at this point. I'm sorry, I'm so nervous, you guys. It's so weird. Too much coffee. Okay. Anyways, so recovery. So I was out there for about 25, 26 years drinking and using. And then finally I found myself on the doorstep of Scripps Drug and Alcohol Treatment Program when I was 42 years old. At that point, I absolutely had the gift of desperation. It was either that or I just didn't want to live anymore. I didn't have any legal problems. I still had my job. I still had my beautiful condo downtown. I still had the hot boyfriend, the cute dog, the whole bit, but I was dying inside. And I was spiritually vacant. I didn't have that in my life. And so, you know, I surrendered. And from that point on, I surrendered and I became willing to do what I had to do to stay sober. That's how desperate I was. It was more important than anything else in my life. And, you know, when I went to detox, they said, okay, now you should go to rehab. I went to rehab. When my counselor rehab told me to go to a recovery home, I went to Turning Point Recovery Home. People ask me sometimes, like, Julie, you're doing so well. What are you doing? This and that. You know, I'm living life on life's terms, too. And my life sucks sometimes, too, or a lot. So, you know, it's been a rough first year. But at the same time, the reason why this works for me is because I'm willing, you know. And I found a sponsor when I was 2 weeks sober at rehab. And she's a beautiful woman who took me through the steps. And, you know, that changed my life. You know, you can't be in this program and in this fellowship and expect for this to come like osmosis. You know, you have to do the work and you have to be willing and you have to sacrifice things. You know, I gave up that condo. I gave up my job that I was making ridiculous money at for the last 12 years. We worked those steps. I obviously don't have time to talk about the steps in any great length, but, you know, for me, steps one, two, and three were, you know, I feel like in a sense I'd already done that. Once I kind of thrown my hands up in the air and I decided that I needed help, I feel like I knew that I was powerless over alcohol and that I couldn't manage my own life anymore. That was so perfectly clear to me. But, you know, when I came to detox, I had no idea what the AA program had to offer or what my life would be like now. I never imagined any of this. you know, steps 4 and 5. You know, it wasn't like this big kaboom bang, you know, crazy things. Like, I knew what I did, you know, and I knew who I was pissed off at and why. But what it did was, is it gave me a sense of not feeling like a victim anymore. You know, that I didn't have to be powerless over people, places, and things, in the sense that, you know, everything happens for a reason under God's, in God's world, and I'm just playing a role in it, you know, and I play my part in everything that has ever been done to me, that hurts me, that I'm angry about, that I'm resentful about. I play a role in that. And 8 and 9, I know I'm skipping some here, but I'm running out of time. But 8 and 9, you know, that was really a healing time for me. And that ex-husband that I completely mowed over, he was so gracious and so understanding and accepting of my apology. And, you know, that was life-changing for me, that these people who I've really, really hurt, when I thought I was a selfless, wonderful person, that, you know, I steamrolled over a lot of people in my life with my kindness and my manipulating. And so that was really wonderful. And, you know, 10 and 11, try to do them, you know, every day. And I'm in constant communication with my higher power. And I have conversations with him like I would a friend. I talk to him in the car. I talk to him in the morning. I talk to him at night. By far the most rewarding thing that I do in this program is working with sponsees. I have a couple beautiful girls that I'm taking through the steps right now. You know, even though I've entrenched my life in recovery in my first year of sobriety, my life still becomes so distracting to me. And these young ladies, and working with them and having to open that book and read the book and talk about the steps and give them their assignments and hear what they have to say and talking about their struggles, they bring me back to what this program's about, and they keep me sober in the most, probably in the biggest way. So anyways, to wrap it up, you know, obviously I love this program. I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for this program. The fellowship